now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. Photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Well, today I'm going to discuss a few topics. One of them will be my analysis of the Breaking Bad show, which was very popular, still is very popular. Now it's on Netflix, as is the case with many other TV shows. I didn't watch it till years after it had run its course, but I was turned on to it by my partner, and I must say it's kind of an allegory and a metaphor for the human condition, for dealing with the inner shadow. And spoiler alert, I won't give out too much information, but I think that the subject of Breaking Bad does bear some discussion, because there's a lot of lessons to be learned from the show, I feel. And another thing I was going to talk about is disclosure. UFO disclosure. Disclosure for who? Disclosure for the general public. Disclosure for the fake light workers. Disclosure for the hardcore UFO researchers. Who is it for? And also, I'm going to talk about de-evolution. The possibility that people may incarnate as grays. Some people are halfway there now with their addiction to their Borg devices and their behavior, which has been modified by the social engineers. But first I'm going to talk about Afghanistan. Last week I talked about Iraq, and I talked about how the powers that be had set off a civil war between the Sunnis and the Shias to justify a larger influx of troops, a larger commitment from the coalition of the willing, so-called. And I thought I'd start off this week's show by talking about Afghanistan. Afghanistan has so many similarities to the Vietnam War. The Viet Cong, the Viet Minh, actually, the original predecessors of the Viet Cong, were formed by Ho Chi Minh. Now, Ho Chi Minh, as in so many other cases, was a good guy who morphed into a bad guy. And we've seen this shtick over and over again. Noriega, Saddam Hussein, Bin Laden, Lee Harvey Oswald. He thought he was a do-gooder doing good work for both the CIA and the Bureau, and you saw what happened to him. And it's a specialty of black ops to turn good guys over time into bad guys, because that most people won't know the difference. They won't say, wait a minute, this guy was a good guy not too long ago, and now he's a bad guy. What gives? The most blatant example of this is how the media over the decades has treated the Russians. First, there was the Russians' czarist monarchy, universally hailed as bad by the media, and then the Soviet Union, which was brought into existence by Wall Street and the Rothschild banking empire, and they were regarded as the great experiment. They were regarded as being good, and then you went from good to bad. The Soviets were regarded as being bad for a while, and then come World War II, suddenly they're good again. And then after World War II, they're bad again. It just, it's like a yo-yo kind of effect back and forth. And the parallel with Vietnam, Afghanistan, concerns a number of factors, right? Because Ho Chi Minh was formerly a U.S. intelligence asset. In fact, the OSS Deer Team saved Ho Chi Minh's life during the latter stages of World War II because Ho Chi Minh was a fugitive from the Japanese. Ho Chi Minh and his network were working for the U.S. OSS against the Japanese. And apparently a medic with the OSS Deer Team had saved Ho Chi Minh's life. And then, of course, Ho Chi Minh writes a constitution modeled closely on the U.S. Declaration of Independence, almost word for word at parts, and he wants to form an independent Vietnam, but of course the European colonial powers had other things in mind. Before too long, he morphed into a bad guy. Okay, Afghanistan. The Clinton administration and the CIA, and also U.S. Special Forces, CIA covert paramilitary operatives, etc., helped the Taliban achieve power in 1996. Back then, the Northern Alliance were the bad guys, and then everything flip-flopped, of course, come 9/11. Then the Northern Alliance were the good guys. Northern Alliance were big-time drug traffickers, opium growers. Just another flip-flop. Don't worry, they won't notice. That's the prevailing thought amongst the powers that be. And when you read accounts of, you know, soldiers and units operating in Afghanistan, some of it sounds eerily familiar to Vietnam, patrolling the same places over and over again, watching out for IEDs, improvised explosive devices, booby traps, mines, which was a daily hazard for infantry units in Vietnam. The psychological aspect, Colonel David Hackworth, the late Colonel David Hackworth, he wrote a great book called About Face. He made a comment in his book regarding Vietnam. He says something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, try to spend a year avoiding mines and booby traps and see what it does to your head. And we see the same thing in Afghanistan today and have been for some time. It's IEDs, ambushes, patrols going over the same areas over and over and over again. And just as Vietnam was not meant to be a winnable war, if you get a chance, find the book written by General Victor Krulak, known as Brute Krulak. He wrote a book called First to Fight about the U.S. Marine Corps and its experiences in the U.S. Marines. He tells an interesting story when the late and unlamented Avril Harriman was Under Secretary of State for Far Eastern Affairs, if memory serves, just like in so many other wars, World War II, and then the so-called Cold War afterward. Avril Harriman, known as the Crocodile, by the way, that's what he was referred to in the State Department as. This is the same Avril Harriman whose investment banks, Brown Brothers Harriman, Guarantee Trust, bankrolled the oil industry in the Soviet Union after it had fallen into disrepair as a result of the Bolshevik Revolution, which likewise was founded by the likes of Brown Brothers Harriman and other Wall Street investment banks and banks in the city of London. Anyhow, fast forward to the 1960s, the same arch intriguer, hooded eyelids and all, Avril Harriman, the Crocodile as he's known in the State Department, winds up sitting at the Under Secretary of State Department of Far Eastern Affairs just in time for the Vietnam War, go figure. And the war is already grinding along. Here comes General Victor Krulak. He wound up commander of the Fleet Marine Force and also was high up in counterinsurgency affairs. Anyway, the point of relevance was Krulak went to the office of Avril Harriman and outlined Harriman a plan to pretty much end the Vietnam War. And what did Harriman do? He figuratively, and maybe literally, put his arms around him, walked him to the door, and gave him the bum's rush. Maybe even gave him the chump squeeze in the process. The chump squeeze is when a person who's a shyster and a con man and is trying to rip you off and play you for a chump, they put their arm around you, and then they squeeze your right shoulder. Okay, that's called the chump squeeze. And for all we know, Avril Harriman may have done that to Victor Krulak, General Victor Krulak of the Marines, because they didn't want to win the Vietnam War. They wanted to drag on and on and on, and the insiders wanted to reap the benefits of all the drugs being flown out of the Golden Triangle. Very interesting, even how the Golden Triangle was formed. Now, the Golden Triangle was there to begin with. There was, you know, Burmese and Laotians had farmed the poppies for a long time, but after the U.S. had stabbed Chiang Kai-shek in the back, the nationalist Chinese that could escape, they went to principally two places, Formosa, now known as Taiwan, and that's where Chiang Kai-shek and his family went to, and his coterie, his entourage, and his trusted generals, and other elements of the nationalist Chinese fled to the Shan states of Burma, where the main cash crop was poppies, opium. And so the nationalist Chinese, what was left of them, they got back into opium trafficking. And they were doing that for decades in the nationalist regime under Chiang Kai-shek to begin with. After they were kicked out of China by the communists, the elements of the nationalist Chinese that went to the Shan states of Burma, well, in order to finance their anti-communist Chinese operations, they resorted to opium growing, heroin production, etc., etc. And, of course, French military intelligence was involved with trafficking the heroin, and Corsican mafia, the Italian mafia, the CIA, etc. Very interesting parallel to Afghanistan, right? Because they make a big deal about the relatively small amounts that the Taliban produce, but it's the huge poppy opium fields that are guarded by the coalition NATO forces that should be a cause of alarm. And this has been commented upon by many authors, principally British soldiers and even high-ranking commanders have vented their spleen in their memoirs and autobiographies, talking about the fact that opium was being grown not just by the Taliban, but by their so-called allies. Their allies being the Afghan National Army, the ANA, and the Afghan National Police, the ANP, the latter chock full of pedophiles. I was reading one book by a guy, and this was well known, a guy that was a lieutenant with the Royal Irish Regiment, and within the Royal Irish Regiment, there was a ranger company. His unit was supporting the British Paras, before that, the British Royal Marines, and they also worked with the U.S. Marines. Anyway, he talked about the fact that, you know, the heroin and the opium was out of control. And he openly wrote about how it was well known amongst the villagers that the governor was a pedo who kidnapped children and raped them. And this is what the Afghan National Police and probably people within pedos within the Afghan National Army do as well. There's a saying in Afghanistan, women are for having children with, boys are for having fun with. And so, once again, they ally themselves with the seediest, corrupt, degenerate, sewer scum elements in a pointless war. And we look at the early stages of the Afghan conflict, this latest Afghan conflict in a land that has seen conflict for thousands of years. The U.S. military and other elements of the so-called coalition had basically cornered hundreds of members of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Tora Bora. Next thing you know, these Pakistani Air Force C-130 Hercules come along and they load hundreds of these Taliban and Al-Qaeda onto the C-130 Hercs, fly them back to Pakistan to safety. And meanwhile, the coalition forces could just sit there and stew in their own juices because they've been stood down. Later, members of U.S. Army Special Forces in Fort Bragg, who had seen this and were pissed off about it, rightly so, they began dying in, what do they call them, murder suicides. That's right. They would wipe out their own families, wives and children, and then turn the guns on themselves. We've seen this before. Classic example of this was the framing of Corporal William Tyree, Operation Watchtower. It was a CIA, Army Special Forces, black op in the 70s, I believe. Special Forces teams would infiltrate and they would plant beacons in Panama, which used to be Colombia, until a Wall Street-inspired coup occurred in the early part of the 20th century and carved out a new country called Panama. Whole nother story. But the beacons planted by Army Special Forces allowed air transports laden with cocaine and other drugs to fly low, avoiding radar, and land in military bases in Panama and offload a bunch of drugs. And what happened was a lot of the Special Forces soldiers, including high-ranking colonels, began to be systematically bumped off because the Mossad was running the whole thing. It was a CIA-Mossad operation, and as is often the case, the Mossad likes to wipe the slate clean, let's say. And one of the soldiers involved in this operation, William Tyree, his wife happened to be in Army CID, Criminal Investigative Division, and they were both keeping detailed notes and documentation about what was going on. Well, he was framed, his wife was killed, and he was set up, and the last I heard, he was rotting in prison. Similar to what happened in a way, but on a larger scale, with Tora Bora, where the Army Special Forces guys who witnessed all the Taliban being loaded into C-130 Hercs and flown away, the ones who complained about it, they started dying in suicides or accidents or killed off in murder-suicides. And we almost saw something similar when a few hundred or maybe even several hundred, I have to check the numbers again, Taliban and Al-Qaeda prisoners were almost released out of a prison in Afghanistan, but thanks to the efforts of members of British Special Boat Service, principally, they stopped them from escaping. In the process, a CIA interrogator was killed by the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda who were in the process of escaping. Now, to me, when I read about this, I said, this smells, stinks to high heaven. Someone wanted these people to escape. And we've seen this before. I'll talk in a future episode about how most of two large German armies were allowed to escape out of the Falaise Gap early August 1944, thus prolonging the war in the West, in the ETO. And this is a subject that your average establishment historian won't touch with a 10-foot pole. They just scratch their head and they end it kind of on a, you know, note of incompetence and fog of war and the friction of war and all this other BS. But it was deliberate. There was a number of instances in that war, when World War II, when the war could have been ended sooner, but the powers that be didn't want it to end sooner. They wanted it to drag on and drag on and drag on. And so, anyway, I was talking about Afghanistan. Same situation. Corrupt allies that like to kidnap and rape little boys, gang rape them. Afghan National Police, the governor at one time was a pedophile. Probably the next one after him was too. And protecting opium poppies, protecting the heroin. prolong the war, flying the Al-Qaeda Taliban to safety at Tora Bora, ridiculous plans like Operation Anaconda, which had no chance of success, a whole other story. Again, Afghanistan. It must be remembered that the conflict is still ongoing, and there's people out there and operating under unbearable conditions under, you know, by most standards. In Celsius, they're up there battling anywhere from 53 to 58 degrees Celsius temperatures. That's like 53 degrees is like 136 degrees Fahrenheit, folks. And some of these soldiers are, you know, marching around out there with body armor and all that stuff. And heat exhaustion sets in. And it's another war that's not meant to be won. So it's just one of those things. So I thought I'd talk about Afghanistan to start off this week's show. Yeah, about Breaking Bad. Okay, spoiler alert. So those of you that haven't seen the show, and I won't go into too many details, but it's about this guy named Walter White, who's a chemist. He's a high school professor, a high school teacher, teaches chemistry. He also has a part-time job working in a car wash. And long story short, he comes down with cancer, and he's got this gung-ho brother-in-law, named Hank, who was with the Drug Enforcement Administration. If you want to read about the origins of organizations like the Drug Enforcement Administration, there's a great book by, I think it's Douglas Valentine, and he talks about the origins of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, and years later it morphed into DEA. And of course now the DEA is just basically the other side of the coin of the CIA side issue. Anyway, in the Breaking Bad story, Hank is his gung-ho brother-in-law who married his wife's sister. And Hank is just really gung-ho. He wants to go out and find all the meth labs. And just on a whim, because Hank is always boasting, and this used to irk Walt, get under his skin, right? And as far as stories about hosting is concerned, just stop for a minute and think about, where did all these quaint sayings come from? Oh, he's starting to get under my skin. What's gotten into you? Right? Stop and think about it. You don't hear those terms as much, but if you watch old movies or read old novels from the 40s and 50s, they were quite common statements. Anyway, Hank was getting under Walt's skin because he kept boasting about his exploits in the DEA. Finally, Hank takes Walt along on a raid to bust a meth lab. So in the process, this kid named Jesse escapes the raid, and Hank takes Walt through this messy, dilapidated, disgusting meth lab. And being a chemist, the wheels start turning in his head because he knows that, well, things could be done better. Things could be run more efficiently. That's the way his mind works. He likes to, you know, make order out of chaos. And long story short, gets into meth production. And he teams up with Jesse, the kid who fled the meth lab, the kid who was cooking the meth, relatively low-grade meth by Walt's later standards. Turns out Jesse is Walt's former student who I think flunked his chemistry class. Okay, so long story short, Walt and Jesse get into the meth cooking business, and Walt begins producing this high-grade meth, and soon he gets involved with the cartels, he gets involved with, you know, just all these issues and problems arise, because what the story of Breaking Bad is all about is, the way I see it, right, is, and the way my partner saw it, because we were talking about this, it's about the inner shadow. It's a metaphor, and books, artwork, movies, they're always open for interpretation. It's really up to the viewer, the reader, the listener to make up their own minds and, you know, see what feels right. But to me, I felt that it was about the inner shadow because Walt started out justifying why he was cooking meth in ever larger batches because he wanted to leave a nest egg for his family because he had terminal cancer and he figured he was going to cark it at some point. And he didn't want his wife and his, I think his son, his teenage son has cerebral palsy. Great acting, great dialogue in the whole series. And it just gets darker and darker, and by the third or fourth season, everything just blows up. I mean, it's just, I haven't even seen all the episodes yet. I've missed a few key episodes, but, you know, by the time the second, third, fourth season rolls around, the thing just goes crazy. But it's all very believable at the same time. And as the episodes go on, as the seasons go on, Walt justifies more and more and more. At first, his motivation was to provide a nest egg for his family. Then later on, it becomes an end justifies the means mentality. And then the justifications become an end unto itself. Walt's ego is activated. The inner, the inner lizard, the inner reptile comes out. And if you've seen any of the ads or the promos for Breaking Bad and you see Walt, it's because he underwent chemotherapy for his cancer. And in order to enhance the effect, he just, you know, he was losing clumps of hair. He just decided to shave his head. And he became known in the drug cartel circles and on the street and, you know, by the DEA as Heisenberg, right? Because Walt is, like, he's a smart guy. He's a student of history, right? I mean, he's even talking about ricin being used as a poison. That's the old Georgi Markov story when this Bulgarian dissident was poisoned by ricin, this operative for the KGB or the Bulgarian spook agency working for the KGB, put a vial of ricin at the end of an umbrella and with a needle attached to the end. And on Waterloo Bridge, this Bulgarian spook jabbed Georgi Markov, I think his name was, in the thigh. Ricin is apparently stronger than cobra venom. And the guy, Georgi Markov, died an agonizing death a few days later. And that's what the Bulgarian spooks and the KGB wanted. They wanted the guy to suffer before he died. Well, anyway, in Breaking Bad, Walt White knows this whole story, and he's coming up with ricin. He's making it because he's a chemist, because they need to assassinate somebody, right? And you'll see the progression of Walt being this goody-two-shoes, mealy-mouthed, passive guy who gets fired from his, spoiler alert, gets fired from his part-time car washing job, right? And all the shame and the humiliation that comes with it. And then also, he's the chemistry professor, right? But then as the cancer progresses, he's got to quit his chemistry job, his chemistry teaching job. And in the early stages of the show, he's concealing his cancer from his family, right? He's just doing this all on his own without... Obviously, it is, in the early stages, he doesn't want his family to know that he's cooking meth. But he doesn't even let them know he's got cancer. So, anyway, you've got to see the show itself. Because it's a character study of someone's descent into the dark side. Someone who had to make a bunch of compromises. Moral compromises. And eventually, in the end, he lacked any accountability. Everything he did was a justification. And in his mind, his thinking, his reasoning, everything became warped. It was very Kafkaesque in a way. Franz Kafka, the great novelist. It was a very Kafkaesque kind of story. So I only bring it up if, for those of you who haven't watched it, And like I said, I only started watching it this year. Started off the end of last year. I didn't start watching Stargate SG-1 until the seventh season because I have this kind of animus about the military and weird science, alien ops. Go figure, why should I have this animus towards the whole concept, right? Then later on, because I didn't have the baseball package at the time, I was forced to watch something to pass the time, and I began watching Stargate SG-1, and there was three showings of it on like two or three different channels on the cable satellite TV. So, and watching all these different episodes, and eventually I got into it, you know. So, and that's very common for me, is to, you know, not watch a show from the very beginning, but just catch on years later. And that was a case of Breaking Bad. So, if you get a chance, watch the show. It's very instructive. It's all about the human character, the inner shadow, the lizard brain, and how there's this whole subculture. Okay, now that I've talked about Breaking Bad, I'm going to talk about Disclosure. Disclosure, UFO Disclosure. Disclosure of the presence of non-human life forms on the planet, alien beings from other worlds on the planet. To me, the term disclosure is not inclusive enough. It should include information, factual information about subterranean beings, about interdimensional beings, extraterrestrial beings, etc. But disclosure is the term we have to work with, so we'll go for it. Right off the bat, I'm not impressed at all with the entire disclosure movement. I've said this again and again. And now Disclosure has egg on their face because they championed pizza pedophile John Podesta as one of their heroes, a guy who's going to help bring disclosure. The guy's whole existence is a lie. And these disclosure types are relying on him to tell the truth or get the government to come out and tell the truth about the existence of aliens, alien life forms, UFOs, etc., etc. Patently absurd, and the whole thing is a joke. And here's why a disclosure is a joke, because they will never say the bottom line. They will never get to the bottom line, that they've been lying to the public at the very least for decades. In the olden days, people just took it for granted that there were people from other worlds, people from other dimensions, people that lived beneath the surface in the underground cavern systems, etc., etc. And it was only in the last 100 or so years with the dumbing down from the education process, so-called, that people just did not want to talk or know about or have any curiosity in aliens, alien life forms, etc. So disclosure is, at best, an absurd joke because they were never going to talk about what was really going on. I mean, how could they? How could they talk about the fact that things such as myself, others, my colleagues, David Icke have been talking about, that the human race is a slave race, that the human race is a hybrid race, and that the ruling elite is actually made up of reptilian-human hybrids who get their marching orders from the pureblood reptilians, from off-world, from underground, interdimensionally, and that the government, the world government, has had actually, the corporations that run the world government have had advanced, super advanced alien technology for decades. Going back at least, we know, at least back to 1941, Cape Girardeau crash. And there are stories coming from elsewhere around the world of previous alien spacecraft crash retrievals. So first, they're going to have to admit that they've been lying to everybody all this time. Second, they'll have to issue a limited hangout because it'll never come anywhere close to the truth. And so I always looked at the whole disclosure concept with a kind of jaundiced eye, if you will. And then they championed John Podesta, pedophile. And there is actually email correspondence from Dr. Edgar Mitchell to John Podesta. And if Dr. Mitchell does not have a discernment to recognize that this Podesta is a pedo freak, he's presumptuous, to say the least, to want to speak on behalf of countless people on this planet. If he can't even recognize a monster in his midst, a reptilian-human hybrid pedo, who knows what else he gets up to, but that's bad enough. So Podesta was held up as a hero by the disclosure movement. People like Dr. Edgar Mitchell have been in email comms with him. And that tells me right off the bat that disclosure has no credibility whatsoever. So let's forget for a moment about the so-called disclosure movement, because they've been rendered null and void. First of all, like I said, they push the starry-eyed New Ager. All ETs are warm and fuzzy beings who are space brothers and space sisters. They never talk about alien abductions. They never talk about negative ETs. They never talk about the cover-up itself, how all this super advanced technology has been hoarded by these corporations and secret societies for so long. No, they don't talk about any of that. So disclosure right off the bat was a waste of time. They were never going to get anywhere near the bottom line. And they're glorifying and edifying people like John Podesta and the leaders of the disclosure movement, people like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, are so lacking in discernment. They would go to the likes of Podesta for help in getting to the truth about UFOs out. So as far as I'm concerned, the disclosure movement is a sick joke, and they were never meant to be taken seriously anyway. I never did. Neither have any of my colleagues. Okay, so what would disclosure mean? Well, disclosure, if and when it ever does happen, right? Because again, they're never going to tell the bottom line. So you might as well forget about that. Richard Dolan says disclosure is inevitable and it'll come out in a way completely unexpected or something like that. Well, yeah. I mean, that's a safe kind of neutral kind of stance to take as far as that goes. They're never going to tell the truth. They're never going to tell the bottom line. Because to tell the truth or anything closer to truth would reveal the fact that this is a big plantation. Equal parts plantation, equal parts terrarium, and the human beings are the ones in the zoo, the inmates. And it's a big recycling center. And they're never going to get to that level. So what does disclosure mean for different groups of people? It was like my colleague Dean mentioned in the dialogue with Dean the other day. He said that there's different tiers and different levels of awareness. And the first basic level of awareness is when someone wakes up and at least recognizes the surface level, 5 cents conspiracy, the fiat currency scam, transnational corporate control, false flag terrorism, chemtrails. That's all surface level stuff, basic stuff. And then, you know, a lot of people feel hopeless, et cetera, et cetera. Then there are different levels and tiers above that. Well, within those people that are aware of the alien non-human presence on Earth, disclosure, if it ever happens, is going to mean different things. And it's all based on the level of conscious awareness and how much control and manipulation a certain demographic, a certain element of the population is under. What does disclosure mean to the New Age la-di-das, the fake light workers? Well, these people have had their egos long since activated. Many of them are hosting one or more negative entities, and they don't have an original thought in their head. And in fact, they are being used as vessels, as hosts by non-human entities. So automatically, from that standpoint, their opinion doesn't count. However, to the general public, when this quasi-disclosure, throw-us-a-bone-type disclosure, aliens are here kind of disclosure, if that ever comes to pass, the New Age la-di-das will be standing there waving their arms, see, look at us, we told you all along. And not only that, not only have we told you about the aliens, but we're in contact. We're starseeds of benevolent aliens. We're light workers. We're members of the Galactic Federation of Light. And some of us are here collecting dues from new members. Because ultimately, for a lot of them, it's just deception, manipulation, and greed. That's what motivates and animates a lot of these fake light workers. So they're going to be jumping up and down saying, I told you so, I told you so. Aliens are here. They're in contact with us. They're our space brothers, space sisters, Galactic Federation of Light, etc., etc. And then you have the other tier, pretty much on a par with one another, the bogus science model types, who were saying, oh yes, we've been studying these sighting reports and these radar reports and pilot reports, and we've been running around with the metal spoons in our pocket hoping to scoop up that elusive landing trace sample, right? Those types. And they're going to puff out their chests and they're going to say, I told you so as well. Because a lot of these people are left-brained. You see, the New Age on the one hand, and dogmatic, intolerant religion on the other, and then add into the mix dogmatic, bonehead science. Those are all religions. Really, they are just religions. Different manifestations of religions, they still have the intolerance, they still have the dogmas, they still have the hierarchical caste system, they still look down their noses on heretics, right? So the lamestream science, bogus science model, lights in the sky, UFO researchers, likewise, as is the case with the fake light workers, the bogus science model UFO researchers will be jumping up and down, metal pockets clanging in their, you know, shirt pockets, making as much noise as they can. And then there's another level, those people who are active disinfo artists for the world government, for the corporations, for the secret societies. They are the new priesthood that has been fashioned right under our noses all these years. These are people that are ex-military or active duty military or have military connections. And they have been set up to be the new priesthood. Nick Pope infamously said that only people with a military or ex-military background, and I'm paraphrasing here, are good eyewitnesses and have worthy testimony or words to that effect when it comes to UFO sightings. Nick Pope went on to say that anyone else, i.e. civilians, anyone else who is not a military person and is talking about UFOs and aliens, Nick Pope describes those people as Joe Sixpacks. So basically he's saying anyone, any civilian, any non-active duty personnel who are going to be inhibited in what they say about the subject anyway, the legitimate military whistleblowers, right? This military priesthood who will be the new go-to guys, the new experts. And Nick Pope was their, you know, one of their propagandists. Nick Pope, the same Nick Pope non-entity, who used to be part of a non-entity of a Ministry of Defense, MOD agency, called the Flying Complaints Desk. When someone would complain and call up the government agency complaining about low-flying or noisy airplanes or noisy helicopters, they would call up the Flying Complaints Desk. Every once in a while, someone would call the Flying Complaints Desk and complain or report a UFO sighting. And because Nick Pope, non-entity that he is, was a former member, allegedly, of this non-entity of an agency called the Flying Complaints Desk, suddenly, you know, the British Ministry of Defense excretes this guy, and he becomes a UFO expert with a background in the Ministry of Defense. It's just so ridiculous at so many levels. He hung on and he clung on to the Rendlesham Forest case to make a name for himself, because he didn't have anything original to say. He was blowing smoke about all the bazillion documents the British government were going to release about UFOs a couple of years back. It was all chicken feed. In the intelligence, counterintelligence world, chicken feed is outdated, irrelevant, trivial information that no one really cares about, right? And so all these documents are regurgitated by the British MOD about supposedly about UFOs, and they're just chicken feed. And so that's another layer who will be playing the disclosure game. You have the fake light workers, New Age la-di-das, I told you so, Galactic Federation of Light. You have the bogus science model, metal spoon in their vest pockets, lamestream science model, lights in the sky, UFO researchers. Don't bother talking to them about alien abductions because they don't. A lot of them don't believe in alien encounters. And then you have the priesthood, right? The military priesthood that's been being created and has been created for some time now. And then you have the hard cases, the people like those that I associate with, those that I network with. Well, what about them? The people that have been talking about the reptilian overlordship, the people that have been talking about military abductions, the real hardcore researchers, not the ones blowing smoke about super soldier this, super soldier that. None of the real players ever big note themselves. They never blow smoke, never boast. There's no reason to. None of the real players ever blow smoke about how great of a healer they are, how much they know, what a great super soldier they are. They don't even use the term super soldier. That was just something that was just created out of thin air and just to puff up people's egos and, you know, just more chaff thrown to the wind, basically, to create more distortion in the signal. I'm talking about the real hardcore, hard case, dedicated investigators who are invariably hardcore spiritual warriors themselves, people who have contacts with both positive ETs and higher dimensional ETs and beings, as well as having had encounters with negative beings who've intruded into their lives at, you know, various times in their life. Those people, what about them? You know what? A lot of them ain't really going to care about disclosure because they've pretty much had a good idea of what's been going on anyway. So the whole point of all this is that, A, disclosure has been completely discredited because of the whole John Podesta pedo Pizzagate thing. And also, those people in the various exopolitics groups and the various disclosure groups who hung their hat on disclosure and who championed and edified the likes of John Podesta, including Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And of course, Edgar Mitchell doesn't talk about negative alien abductions or anything like that. Perish the thought. But we're just supposed to like bow down and edify him because he's been an astronaut, right? When there's countless abductees in my labs out there that have been taken out into space and far beyond this world, far beyond this solar system, far beyond anywhere Dr. Edgar Mitchell, any other astronaut that has been taken to that we know of. So stick a fork in disclosure, it's done. Enough said. Now, how about the concept of de-evolution? Now, that's an interesting subject. There has been talk for some time about how at least some of the gray factions or beings that look like the ubiquitous grays, there's different factions of beings that look gray, they're not all the same or not all from the same group. That much being said, there has been talk for some time that at least some factions of these so-called grays have come from the future, and that indeed they are a branch, a split-off branch of the human race that dead-ended, and that some of these grays that used to be part of the human race have come back in time and are needing human DNA, human tissue, human blood, etc., to revivify their dying race. A recent whistleblower, Dan Burish, who's kind of come and gone on the scene, he was debriefed by Bill Hamilton. In fact, Bill Hamilton wrote a book about Dan Burish. Dan Burish says that he worked with an ET in a clean biosphere environment in an area of S4 underground. And this group of ETs were known as J-Rods. And he worked with a J-Rod ET. And apparently this group of ETs had come from the future. They'd kind of split off from the human race. Something went wrong. Somewhere along the line, they went from being human to looking like these ETs, and now they've come back in time, and they're trying to fix themselves, let's say. And I don't think that's as far-fetched as it sounds, because when I look around society and I look around some of these hosty people you see in the UFO, New Age movement, fake light worker field, some of these people, also you add into the mix those people that are addicted to their digital devices, addicted to their video games, and not really having that wide range of human emotions, or just totally in their own headspace. Those types of people are already at least halfway towards being a gray anyway. The digital device addiction, that's symptomatic of this whole Borg artificial intelligence AI agenda. And people don't realize just how pervasive that is, especially in the military circles and DARPA and places like that, where they're actively working on all these programs, and some of these programs and projects, they filter down into the regular surface level military and intelligence community, and also private corporations, private R&D research and development centers work on AI type programs, sometimes under a government contract, Pentagon contract. You know, the technology they come up with, it just plugs people even more into technology. So you have all these people that are already kind of primed towards being an emotionless, deceitful little gray turd of an ET. There was this one woman that I saw. She claimed to have a gray ET consciousness working through her in her lecture. And she did all the justifications about alien abductions and said it was all for her own good. And get this, she also said that all negative alien abductions, all reports of negative alien abductions are done by the military, right? Never mind the long-standing connection deep black elements of the military have had with the Zeta Grays, at least just the Zeta Grays. No telling how many other gray races they're in contact with. Bob Lazar talked about this. Dan Sherman talked about this. A lot of people have seen grays in the company of military people. So it's disingenuous, to say the least, for this person who claims to have a gray consciousness coursing through her, and I wouldn't doubt it, is kind of gray and robotic and automaton-like as she is. But to say that all negative alien abduction experiences are solely due to the military, that's like putting the cart before the horse, and it's completely ignoring the long-standing connection that the deep black elements of the military have had with Zeta Grays. Is just another lie from the Zeta or Gray collective. So stop and think about that. All these people, these fake light workers, these people addicted to digital devices, all the people that work, you know, all the eggheads working in DARPA, the scientists and engineers who give no thought as to the consequences, implications of what they're doing in all these research and development projects. They just keep building all these androids and machines and making people more robotic, more. A lot of those people have a leg up on reincarnating, because the grays do play a role in this reincarnation, soul harvesting, soul recyclement scam. Absolutely, the grays do, at least elements or factions of the grays. So keep that point in mind when you see these people in society. They have the empty vessel syndrome going on. They don't really manifest wide range of emotions. They're kind of robotic and automaton-like, and those people are halfway towards being a gray already. So it's not just evolution going forward and once again regaining our quantum multidimensional capabilities, but there's also an element of de-evolution where people reincarnate as a gray and they go backwards. And think about what I said about Dan Burish working with the J-Rods. J-Rods come from the future because they split off from the human race and they look like little ETs, and they need help to get back on an evolutionary biological right track. So I want you to think about that as well, and think about how some of the activities, the associations you keep, the habits you have, how that may be leading you down, as well as addictions, digital devices. God, some people, if they're away from their digital devices for any length of time, they almost start like twitching and spazzing out and basically going into withdrawal, right? Because they're away from the Borg collective. So keep that in mind, dear listeners. There is something to be said about the Borg collective, and watching this woman in a lecture I attended blowing smoke about how she was really a gray and a gray was speaking through her and coming up with all the transparent gray justification, gray lies about alien abductions, the medical procedures done on frightened, traumatized, unwilling people, including children, right? And all the justifications that excreted out of this gray woman. That could be what's in store for a lot of people if they don't mind their P's and Q's. So anyhow, dear listeners, we've reached the end of this segment of Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars. And wherever you may be, dear listeners, daytime or nighttime, have a very, very pleasant time, and we'll see you next week. We'll be right back.